Epilogue. What happened to them? Jack Casement. When his work on the Transcontinental was completed, Jack Casement returned home to Painesville, Ohio. Hailed as a hero, he was elected to the Ohio Senate. But the man who had led troops in pitched battles in the Civil War and had led the Union Pacific halfway across the continent found life in a legislative chamber much too tame. By the late 1870s, accompanied by his brother Dan, he was off traveling again and supervising the construction of various railroads in Canada and the United States. For the next 20 years, Casement continued to move from one railroad project to another, and in 1897, nearing the age of 70, he took on the job of overseeing the construction of a railroad through the jungles and mountains of Costa Rica. It was a challenge that in many ways was no less daunting than the building of the Transcontinental had been. By this time, Dan had died, and Casement was joined in Costa Rica by one of his sons. For the better part of 6 years, the two Casements struggled to bring the road to completion. But in 1903, after outbreaks of yellow fever, mudslides, and other disasters had taken a horrific toll on his workers, Casement, for the first time in his life, was forced to abandon a project. Still, his adventures were not over. In 1906, after completing yet another railroad endeavor, he was in a hotel on the outskirts of San Francisco when the devastating San Francisco earthquake struck. Buried in the debris when the hotel collapsed, he suffered serious injuries. Yet within a year, he was back at it, always on the lookout for the next railroad to build. The seemingly indestructible Casement was still working in 1909 when he developed pneumonia. The man who had led battalions of soldiers and armies of railroad workers died on December 13, 1909. Lewis Clement. Lewis Clement, whose engineering genius made it possible for the Central Pacific to conquer Cape Horn and to construct the Summit Tunnel, would continue a life of considerable achievement once the Transcontinental was completed. Shortly after his work on the Great Iron Road was done, he joined the Southern Pacific Railroad Company and helped design and build its railroad from Sacramento to Los Angeles. When that project was completed, he was appointed chief engineer of the Western Division of the Atlantic and Pacific Railroad, which became part of the Santa Fe Railroad. Clement was an accomplished inventor as well as an engineer. Among his inventions was the famous emigrant sleeping car, the railroad car that transported millions of settlers to the West once the Transcontinentals were built. Clement also invented a machine that made it easier for railroad builders to bend rails to precise specifications. In 1881, Clement turned his attention to developing new methods of travel within cities. He became one of the nation's leading designers and builders of both cable and electric railway systems. A highly cultured man, Clement was invited into many learned societies, both in the United States and abroad. By the time he died on October 29, 1914, at his home in Hayward, California, the many awards he received from these organizations made him arguably the most honored of all those who built the Transcontinental Railroad. Charles Crocker. When the Transcontinental Railroad was completed, Charlie Crocker, who had physically overseen the Central Pacific's arduous construction activities from the laying of its first rails to the last, was exhausted. Deciding to retire, he asked his fellow CP stockholders to buy him out. When they were ready to do so in 1873, a serious economic depression hit the United States and their payment to him was delayed. Meantime, Crocker, who had become bored in retirement, found new employment overseeing the construction of several railway lines that eventually became part of the Southern Pacific Railroad. When Crocker was finally paid for his Central Pacific stock, he became an immensely wealthy man. He plunged into several new activities, including real estate development. His most important post-transcontinental undertaking was the establishment of a giant irrigation company, an operation that helped establish California as one of the leading agricultural states in the nation. In 1886, while on a visit to New York, Crocker was thrown from a carriage in which he was riding and seriously injured. He never fully recovered and died 2 years later in Monterey, California. Grenville Dodge. When Tom Durant held his excursion to celebrate the Union Pacific's having reached the 100th meridian, Grenville Dodge took part in the festivities and helped Durant stage many of the extravagant events. While he was doing so, and with no campaigning on his part, Dodge was elected to the U.S. Congress from his Iowa home district. He was so busy building the Transcontinental, however, that he devoted almost no time to that position. In 1872, when the Crédit Mobilier scandal became public knowledge, it was revealed that Dodge had made a great deal of money by secretly purchasing shares in Crédit Mobilier in his wife's name. To escape testifying before congressional committees investigating the scandal, the much-traveled Dodge fled to Texas, where he went into hiding. During the 1880s and 1890s, Dodge emerged from hiding, went back into railroading, and served as president or chief engineer of several railroad companies. He also spent a good deal of time in New York, where he had established several businesses. Because of his exploration, travels, and railroad building in the West, Dodge is well remembered there. His home in Council Bluffs, Iowa, where he died in 1916, is a National Historic Landmark. Fort Dodge in Kansas, an important army base in America's frontier days, is named for him. So too is a well-traveled bridge that spans the Missouri River. Thomas Durant. Immediately following the linking of the rails at Promontory Summit, almost everyone connected with the Transcontinental was regarded with reverence by the American public. That included Tom Durant, who, among other honors, was elected a fellow of the prestigious American Society of Civil Engineers. There was one group, however, that did not hold Durant in such high regard. For a long time, Durant's fellow members of the Union Pacific's board of directors tried to oust him from the board. They were fed up with the financial shenanigans that had enriched him while, on more than one occasion, coming close to bankrupting the UP. But just as the movement to remove Durant was gaining momentum, he beat his fellow directors to the punch and abruptly resigned from the Union Pacific shortly after the rails were joined at Promontory Summit. Taking the millions he had made, particularly through the scandalous Crédit Mobilier he had created, he moved on and, as historian Edwin Roswentz wrote, set out to set up other corrupt businesses and to pursue other fields of plunder. For the slippery Durant, it was a fortunate move. Up to this point, the public had been unaware of the illegal nature of the Crédit Mobilier and the fact that some of the nation's most important political leaders had made large sums of money through its maneuverings. But then, in 1872, a major American newspaper broke the story, naming names and revealing how the Crédit Mobilier had bilked the public. It would become the biggest political scandal of the century. The nation's vice president, Schuyler Colfax, a number of members of Congress, and certain Union Pacific officials would fall into disgrace. Because he had distanced himself from the UP, Durant escaped the scandal relatively unscathed. But he would finally pay the price for his many outrageous actions. The man who on one hand had played a major role in making the Transcontinental a reality, and on the other had been perhaps the greatest scoundrel in the entire endeavor, would spend the last 12 years of his life fighting lawsuits from disgruntled partners and investors he had cheated. Durant died in Warren County, New York, on October 5, 1885. Collis Huntington. Collis Huntington, the man who wielded the most power in the Central Pacific, remained in railroading for the rest of his life. By acquiring the majority of stock in a number of expanding railway lines and attaining directorships in others, Huntington came to control a transportation system that stretched from the Atlantic to the Pacific. Of all those responsible for building the Transcontinental, Huntington was arguably the most complex of all. In his running of the Central Pacific, he was manipulative and often ruthless. and he never let regard for the law either stand in the way of benefiting the CP or interfere with his attainment of enormous wealth. Yet late in life, he devoted himself to a cause that changed the lives of some of the nation's most disadvantaged citizens. On his many travels to the South, Huntington came into contact with African Americans whose parents and grandparents had been slaves. Determined to help them rise out of poverty, he became a chief financial supporter of both Hampton Normal and Agricultural Institute and Tuskegee Institute. These two schools were devoted to teaching young African Americans the trades and skills necessary to help them build better lives for themselves and their families. Huntington also indirectly left behind another important legacy. He had no children, but he willed much of his immense estate to his nephew, Henry E. Huntington. For the rest of his life, the nephew used much of his inheritance to accumulate a magnificent library of rare books and celebrated paintings. When he died, these treasures became the foundation of the Huntington Library, art collections, and botanical gardens in San Marino, California, forever linking Collis Huntington's wealth with the public good. Leland Stanford. In many ways, Leland Stanford's life was even more interesting after the Transcontinental Railroad was completed than it was during the time he served as president of the Central Pacific. He remained involved in railroading and eventually became president of the Southern Pacific. Stanford's interests, however, expanded far beyond railroads. Among them was his ownership of a 55,000-acre farm that contained the largest vineyard in California. He also bought a 19,000-acre ranch where experiments with growing new varieties of wheat took place. His greatest love, however, was horse racing, and yet another large ranch that he owned was devoted to the breeding of racehorses. In 1884, Stanford's life took a dramatic turn when his 15-year-old son died during a trip to Europe. As a memorial to the boy, the enormously wealthy Stanford established Stanford University in his son's honor. In 1885, Stanford, who had previously served as governor of California, re-entered politics and was twice elected to the U.S. Senate. He died in Palo Alto, California, on June 21, 1893. James Strobridge. One of the closest relationships that developed during the building of the Transcontinental Railroad was that between James Strobridge and Charles Crocker, the two men most responsible for the Central Pacific's successfully laying tracks through the rough landscape that many thought would be impossible to penetrate. Similar in both perseverance and fiery temperament, Strobridge and Crocker followed similar paths once their work on the Iron Road was done. After the Golden Spike ceremony in 1869, Strobridge, like Crocker, went into retirement, settling with his wife Hannah and their six children on a farm near Hayward, California. But, like Crocker, he soon became dissatisfied with being idle. In 1877, the two men joined forces again when Crocker asked Strobridge to help him oversee the construction of what would become a large section of a second transcontinental line. When that work was completed, Strobridge became a construction boss on two other lines, one from Mojave to Needles, California, the other up the Sacramento River Canyon toward Oregon. Strobridge continued supervising railroad construction until 1889, when, at the age of 62, he retired to his farm, this time for good.